On the agenda is House File 4, but we actually have in front of us right now is Senate File 1904. We'll make the appropriate motions at the conclusion. So Senator Dibble moves the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Mr. Chair, what I intend to do is just give a kind of a high-level overview of what we're seeking to accomplish with Senate File 1904, and then I will turn it over to counsel to walk through first the numbers and then some of the language. Mr. Chair, members, Senate File 1904, of course, is the transportation finance bill, and as everyone is probably aware, we're seeking to make a significant step forward in investing resources in our transportation system, which has gone lagging, despite the fact that we put some additional resources in back in 2008. We know that that was just a very, very small step, and many of those resources have either been eroded by inflation or already consumed, and so we're kind of back into that same set of circumstances that we were in 2008. At that point, of course, it had been something like 20 years since we had done anything to invest in our transportation system of any substance or importance. We were coming off the aftermath of a tragedy of the bridge collapse. And so we said at that time, we're going to have this conversation again sooner than waiting another 20 years. And so here we are in 2015, seeking to make these key investments in our quality of life and in our economy. So the approach that we take is raising some additional resources, just shy of $1 billion over the biennium for the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, out of which, of course, we pay for our state highways, our county state highways, county state aid highways, our municipal state aid streets.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, could you speak a little closer to the microphone? It's a little hard to hear
you.
I
sure can. And some additional dollars that we get over to townships and some other purposes. We do that by raising the gas tax in the form of what we term the gross receipts tax, and that's basically a gas tax that's raised on the price of gasoline on a per-gallon basis at the wholesale level of 6.5% of the price. We establish a floor of $2.50 per gallon. We can get into the mechanism about how we accomplish that, but the short version is it functions in exactly the same way the gas tax does today, but for how we establish the amount that we raise keyed off the price per gallon. We raise license tab fees, 0.25%. That's a fee that hasn't been increased for quite some time. Again, those are both constitutionally dedicated resources that go only for highway purposes. In the metropolitan area, we know that we have a huge population influx that we're anticipating in the coming 10 to 20 years. And in order to accommodate that growth and also in order to remain economically competitive with other metropolitan regions around the country and around the world, we need to complete our transitway system that's been established on a shorter timeline horizon than the 40 years that's presently anticipated. And so we do, like every other metropolitan area does around the country, we increase the sales tax in the metropolitan area. So we propose to raise it to a full cent from the existing quarter cent that we raise in five of the seven metropolitan counties. That puts a little more than $300 million on the table. That what that also accomplishes is it allows us to both build the transitways as well as operate the entire transit system in the metropolitan area without any general fund dollars or any general obligation bonding. We raise some additional dollars for local roads, particularly municipalities. It's quite clear that on the formula basis, the 9% that comes out of the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund that goes to municipal state aid cities that are cities 5,000 and above, those are insufficient resources for them to keep up with their own streets that they have to fully fund through their property tax, much less the state aid streets, which are the arterials that hook up to the statewide system and carry heavier loads of traffic. Much of the municipal state aid resources are consumed by mandated cost participation requirements as it is, and so they don't really even have any flexibility in those dollars. So we raise some additional dollars for both cities above 5,000 as well as cities below 5,000 via some fees that we enact on some various vehicle titling and vehicle transfer fees that we have existing. Additionally, we get some more dollars over to both small and large cities out of the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund through the 5% set aside that we can change out every year. So with that 5% that kind of comes off the top before the formula dollars flow to state highways, counties, and cities, we keep the existing resources that we devote to townships, but then some dollars that we have, which we call a flexible fund, we put those flexible dollars that are used for typically turnbacks over into the regular state road construction program, and we use those dollars to get to cities, both large and small. In the metropolitan area for county state aid highway purposes, we have existing the motor vehicle lease tax, out of which presently 50% of that which remains in that fund after a certain amount gets scooped out and put into the general fund. Presently, that's divided 50-50, Greater Minnesota Transit, and these five counties, county state aid purposes. We devote all of those dollars existing, and then an additional $10 million that we devote to this purpose from general fund resources just to the county's metro state aid purposes. We allow Hennepin and Ramsey to participate in those dollars, but those dollars are allocated on a population basis. We only count 50% of Ramsey counties and only 25% of Hennepin counties population for the purpose of allocating those dollars. In your packet are various charts and spreadsheets and whatnot that show how those dollars flow and in what proportions. We also devote some dollars for bike ped initiatives around the state. Through some existing federal resources, we establish a floor of what comes into the state through the federal government for bike ped purposes, so that we spend no less than those dollars going forward. That goes to Greater Minnesota bike ped initiatives, and we devote some additional general fund dollars. And when I say bike ped, I'm also talking about safe routes to school. It all gets considered in the same vein. And some of the sales tax that we raise in the metropolitan area, we devote to bike ped purposes for cities and counties in the metropolitan area. So that's how we accomplish that goal. For Greater Minnesota Transit, what we do is we devote more of the motor vehicle sales tax than we do today to Greater Minnesota Transit. So that's how we make up the amount that comes out of what they're presently getting out of the motor vehicle lease tax, and then we devote some general fund dollars out of our target to Greater Minnesota Transit. So we both maintain their base allocation and then provide for some growth on our path to get them ultimately what's needed for Greater Minnesota Transit over the long haul. They'll be needing another $45 million per year. But they couldn't absorb that amount in such a short amount of time. But we do need to eventually, over a period of time, get to that amount additional per year for Greater Minnesota Transit. We establish a local bridge account with some general fund dollars to devote some dedicated dollars to fixing our local bridges. We establish large cities and a small cities account. And some of those dollars that I just described flow into this large city and the small city account, and those are divided out evenly for those purposes. And that is the, I think, Mr. Chair, the broad overview of some of the goals and some of the efforts that we're going to with the devotion of resources. There's much, much more, but that's the very broad brushstroke overview of some of the major thrust and efforts of our committee. To date, with any big things I'm forgetting.
Thank
with
you.
With that, I will turn the presentation over to Ms. Boyd, Krista Boyd, our finance analyst, who will walk us in more detail through some of the finance elements.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Dole and Ms. Boyd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Right. One, I'll just touch on, we also have a major initiative around railroad safety, trying to provide for improved safety. We raised $37 million through an assessment on the Class 1 railroads, and we'll hear more detail from Ms. Boyd about that.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Boyd? Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if you look at your spreadsheet, I'll do an overview very briefly of the spreadsheet and then go through the change items for you. If you look at your spreadsheet, it's organized first by agency and then program within the agency. We have a column designating fund, a column designating spending in the previous biennium, and then there are the governor's RACs in the next column relating to the upcoming biennium and the tails, and then similarly for the Senate in the last columns. And the very last column is a comparison between the Senate and governor's position at this point. And I also want to start, actually, by going to the last page and pointing out the bottom line of the general fund spending. In the very last line of the spreadsheet, on line 471, under the Senate column, biennium fiscal year 16-17, you'll see a general fund impact change from base of 24.962. The division has a target of $25 million. So slightly under that at this point. And in the tails, the annual total is 29.143, and the tails target at this point is $30
million. Okay.
So going back to the beginning of the spreadsheet on line 9, this is under the aeronautics budget activity, and these are one-time appropriations from the State Airports Fund. This is a governor's rec. If you recall, in 2014, the general fund repaid the State Airports Fund $15 million that was borrowed several years prior for budget for deficit reduction purposes. And this is the final spend down of that $15 million payback. In the last biennial budget, there was $4 million in one-time appropriations from the Airports Fund to pay for projects that were ready to go. And this is the remainder of that for projects that are now online. The next change items are on 19, 20, and 21 under the Aviation Support and Services. The first is basically a technical change. This is an existing appropriation that's now made from the State Airports Fund and Agency Services later in the spreadsheet, and it was a governor's rec. It was felt by MnDOT that that would be more appropriately made in the aeronautics program so that all the airports fund appropriations were in the same place. Line 20 is the first of a series of appropriation increases throughout MnDOT's programs. They're labeled purchasing power restoration. Those are governor's recommendations. As you know, in this bill, there are increased trunk highway revenues available to MnDOT. So the governor and the department has recommended this distribution of funding throughout the department to cover increased cost of commodities and utilities, et cetera. These amounts also include the across-the-board 1.8% per year salary increases. And you'll see in the aviation support and services line that amount for the biennium is $500,000 from the Trunk Highway Fund. Next is on line 21 is a governor's rec to purchase. The governor's rec was to appropriate $9.96 million from the general fund to purchase two new state planes. These deliver air transportation services for state employees. And the governor requested two planes. The division decided to fund roughly half of that amount at $5 million one time to purchase one plane.
Okay. Do you know what type of a plane that is?
I can find out for you, Mr. Chair. I'm not an aviation expert, or we can ask the department to find
out.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Dibble.
We're hoping it's a plane manufactured in Minnesota.
I don't think that's possible because I think they're just Cirrus is just manufacturing their first could be wrong, but their first larger plane, unless they've already are doing it. But I'm guessing that it probably is either a Beechcraft or could be a Learjet. But I'm guessing the governor would want to get in and out of some smaller places than what a jet would facilitate.
Mr. Chair, continuing in the transit area, On line 32 of the spreadsheet, this is a general operating increase from the general fund for operations of Greater Minnesota Transit in contracts with providers in rural Minnesota, and I should say Greater Minnesota. And the Senate position is $12 million in the first biennium and $7 million, so 3.5 a year ongoing after that. The governor's position was $10 million in the first biennium and $20 in the second, so an ongoing $10 a year. The next line is another one of the purchasing power restoration lines from the department and under transit. That amount comes out to $70,000 for the biennium. And on the next line, on line 34, these are one-time appropriations from the Greater Minnesota Active Transportation Account and Special Revenue Fund. This is a new account created later in the bill related to Senator Peterson's program of active transportation program provisions that we put in the bill. It's special revenue. This actually comes off our general fund target. $3 million a year from the general fund are transferred into this fund and then appropriated to the commissioner under the provisions of the statutory provisions for the purposes of the account. And that includes bicycle, pedestrian, and safe routes to school non-infrastructure activities.
Yeah.
On the next page. What did you want to do that first? Sorry.
Is it important for the presentation or not?
No. Mr. Chair, on the next page, you'll see there's no change items under the passenger rail activity. That's a $500,000 a year base appropriation from the general fund. Under the freight activity, there are several change items. The first two relate to each other. They're both, it's a governor's recommendation to create a new Rail Safety Administration office in the freight budget activity. The governor's recommendation was to fund this at $1.4 million a year from the general fund. The Senate has it from a special revenue fund, and this is related to the rail the railroad assessments that Senator Dibble referred to. That will come in at $32.5 million a year to a special revenue fund and statutorily appropriated. This $1.4 would come off the top to fund the rail office. So you'll see on line 51 of the spreadsheet in the Senate proposal, the remainder of that assessment is just listed as a statutory appropriation. And then on line 50 is, again, another purchasing power restoration line in MnDOT, including the salary increases, and that's $446,000 for the biennium from Trunk Highway for freight. Now moving on to state roads, on line 68 of the spreadsheet, we'll start getting into spending down of the Trunk Highway Fund additional revenues that are included in the bill. In operations and maintenance, that amount for the biennium is $46.4 million from the Trunk Highway Fund. And you'll see below in program planning and delivery, jumping to line 78, that amount from the new revenues is $89.6 million roughly from the biennium for state road planning and delivery. Back up on line 76, there are one-time amounts under program planning and delivery. This is an appropriation related to repairs from the 2012 floods. This is to repair damage to the J. Cook State Road, State Park Road. Apparently the damage was so extensive that not all projects were completed in time, and this is just to move the appropriation for that project into the next biennium so that work can be completed. On line 77, this is a recommendation from the governor as well to increase the base amount by $1 million a year from the Trunk Highway Fund in this area for management of contaminated material in MnDOT property rather than having to take that from other expenses. It would just be sort of a source of revenue for those to occur. The amount varies per year. So that is the governor's request. And on line 79, this is a statutory appropriation, so it does not roll up into the totals, but wanted to show it as a new item. This is an increase in existing statutory appropriation. It's related to conveyance of surplus right-of-way of MnDOT parcels, and MnDOT plans to roughly double the parcels that are processed and disposed of basically every year, and the increased revenue from that activity is going to fund the land conveyance unit, and that's what this spending is for, $1.3 million a year. On the next page, state road construction. First, on line 88, the appropriation increase related to the new trunk highway revenues in the bill is $492 million for the biennium. The next line is appropriation of increased federal transportation funding under the MAP 21 federal authorization. These are funds that flow into the trunk highway fund on a reimbursable basis to the department, but they need to be appropriated by the legislature to be used. It's my understanding they're already dedicated to programmed projects. So that's spending of $97.3 million in the biennium. The next line is it's a new direct appropriation from the trunk highway fund on line 90, turnback projects. This is related to the elimination of the bill of the flexible highway account later, and I believe Senator Dibble touched on that. Right now, the flexible highway account receives a portion of the 5% set aside from the top of the highway user tax fund, and the use of that account is at the discretion of the commissioner with several allowable uses, the most prevalent of which has been turnbacks on county and city state aid systems and sometimes trunk highways. And so with the elimination of that account, this new direct appropriation was made roughly in the amount of the governor's recommendations in his budget that was going to go to county turnback. So these amounts will be transferred into the county turnback account for the biennium. And this the statutory connection to this shows later that the commissioner is now directed to make a biennial budget in his next biennial budget submission to make an ongoing request for what will be needed for turnbacks. Line 91 is a one-time appropriation from the Trunk Highway Fund of $5 million for noise barrier construction along trunk highways. Line 92 is a $2 million one-time transfer into the newly created state right-of-way acquisition loan account. This is created later in the bill. This funds a loan program, which there will be statutory language later in the bill, but this is just a one-time influx to that account. Line 99 is increased required debt service payments related to the trunk highway bonding that's present in the bill, and that comes in at $21.4 million for the biennium from the trunk highway. Line 107 is, again, a purchasing power restoration line, including salaries for electronic communications, and that's $470,000 for the biennium. And that matches the governor's rec, as pretty much all of them do.
What is purchasing power restorations?
Mr. Chair, it's been explained to me, this is taking advantage of the new revenues that are flowing to the Trunk Highway Fund and allowing the department to actually spend more on the increased costs of commodities and utilities, et cetera, for projects that have been sort of lagging behind in projects expenditures. This also includes the 1.8% salary increase across the board from MnDOT. So there's two pieces to that.
So it has nothing to do with energy.
Not that I know of, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, so Mr. Chair, it's just basically, as paper clips have gotten more expensive, basically administrative overhead, and the department, of course, is funded. All the administrative tasks of the department are funded through the Trunk Highway Fund, which has been a declining source relative to inflation, and so it's basically an inflationary recognition of inflation for both salaries and benefits as well as price of paper clips.
All right, Mr. Thank Chair.
You. Senator Lurie.
I think your question was more around what type of – is it purchasing power or is it purchasing power?
Oh.
I think was
– That's right.
The reason purchasing power.
That's what I thought.
The reason I mentioned that is that as I drive at night, some of the lighting around, especially the intersections, are turned off. And so, I was thinking that maybe it's an attempt to save some money from, lighting all the lights up.
Mr. Chair, maybe it does have a double meaning in the end. Mr. Chair, then continuing in the local road section, starting on line 122, this would be the appropriation increase, excuse me, tied to the new revenues in the bill that flow through the highway user tax to the county stated highway fund. This is spending, just spending down those new revenues. And this this appropriation is then allocated to counties on a statutory formula. That amount is $256.3 for the biennium.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dill.
So in your packet is a packet that has a run. So if you want to take a look at your county or your counties, you can see how your counties will participate in those increases. There's also another run for municipalities for the increase to the municipal state aid fund. It's in this the packet that looks like this.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, the next line on line 123 is a governor's change item. This is related to an allocation correction for the motor vehicle lease sales tax. The motor vehicle lease sales tax revenue is a part of general fund sales tax revenue. It flows into the general fund. By statute, $32 million of that remains in the general fund, and the remainder is split between Greater Minnesota Transit and CASA funds for the five metro collar counties, and that's split by population of the counties. As it turns out, the two transportation funds have been receiving transfers based on the 6.875% tax rate rather than the 6.5% general tax rate. They've been getting a piece of the legacy fund. The legacy monies have been receiving the adequate amount. The general fund has been taking the hit and paying the amount out twice, essentially. So this is a correction. It restores the correct funding to the general fund from the transportation pieces, and there is a corresponding reduction to the transit assistance fund for Greater Minnesota Transit. That's not shown on here because it's a statutory flow through appropriation, but it will change the county state aid direct appropriation.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, would this be the right time to ask a question about how you derived the 25% for Hennepin County with regard to population? Because I did direct my eyes to the run, which you mentioned, and because of that 25%, Hennepin, which I've never agreed with, that we were excluded anyway from the collar counties, because I think if you look at where the lease tax is generated, you would see that most of it is generated in probably Hennepin and then Ramsey after that. But so my question is that Hennepin still gets less than Carver and Dakota based on that 25% formula. So I'm wondering what the rationale for that is. If we realize that that was incorrect to not have them be part of the formula, then why we would still, on a population basis, end up with them being less than counties that have less population?
Senator Nibble.
So Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, the run that looked like this is the regular county state aid highway formula.
Right, that's not the one I'm looking at.
And then, in addition to that, the counties in the metro area would then receive a proportion of the motor vehicle lease tax that doesn't go into the general fund, that's kept for transportation purposes. And so you can see the current distribution in that first box and then the proposed distribution in the second box of the second row or second set of boxes. And you're correct, Senator Bonoff, that under this scenario, counting only 25% of Hennepin County's population, Hennepin County would only get about $16 million over the biennium. Contrasted with, more for Anoka and Dakota. The reason for that, Senator Bonoff, is because the need for supporting county state aid highways, as contrasted with, really the need to bolster transit and other forms of mobility and service improvements is greater in some of those suburban counties because they rely less on transit to the degree that the two core counties, Hennepin and Ramsey, do. If Hennepin were to count more of its population even 50% of its population, you can see it would double the amount, so it would get, you know, 30-some million dollars out of that fund, and then all the other corresponding counties in the metro area would come down pretty dramatically and only get a little bit. If Hennepin County counted all of its population, the other six counties, particularly the five that who have been most engaged and active on making this argument, would get very, very little. So it was just an attempt for us to try to kind of balance out to some degree based on articulated and documented need and get those dollars distributed across the metro, not proportionally, but, you know, responding to the issues that have been raised.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, do you have the actual sales lease tax collections by county?
Senator?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonhoff, no, I don't have that in my hands.
I've seen that, or it's been expressed to me.
I think that's information that Department of Revenue has compiled. And I think your argument is correct that most of these dollars are generated in Hennepin County. That's absolutely true. But like a lot of things, not the least, the whole reason we're having this conversation is, of course, we know that, you know, much of the dollars that are generated for the regular CASA formula are generated in the metro. As a matter of fact, all seven counties are net exporters of county state aid highway dollars. And most are net donors or net receivers of that. So like a lot of things, a lot of resource gets generated in the metro that flows to other places, and even more so as you narrow in and take a closer look at the two core counties, particularly Hennepin, a lot of dollars get generated that just get shipped right across the border. So it's a dynamic that happens.
Well,
so,
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, number
Senator
one,
Bob,
thank you for including the counties, the two counties. I'm, you know, very, very appreciative that change was made, and I would ask if I could, and perhaps of staff, Ms. Boyd, perhaps if I could get the detail around what is actually collected by county. Thank you,
Senator Dibble, and Senator Bonhoff. Is the formula split based on population, or
Mr. Chair?
Senator Dibble?
So the for this purpose, yes. For the regular county state aid highway that flows out of the formula, out of the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, there are two different formulas that drive how the county state aid highway dollars are split up. There's an old formula and a new formula, apportionment sum, the excess sum. We actually kind of lock those down in terms of percentages that come out of that, out of county state aid. And I don't remember that formula.
But, Mr. Chair, to your question, for this purpose, it is population-based. Okay. And Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble has chosen, because of this density in those two counties, to use the full population in the other counties. And then it seems arbitrary, but picked 50% for Ramsey and 25% for Hennepin.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sieben.
I'd just like to add to this conversation a little bit by thanking Senator Dibble for coming up with this solution in his bill. It was a very, I'd say at times, difficult conversation that was based on the 2008 transportation bill, where the ring counties agreed to certain parameters within that bill that five-county funding would move forward. And so I know that it was a difficult issue for Senator Dibble to balance different interests, and I think that this solution is a fair one and one that should be maintained in the bill as it moves forward. So I just wanted to express my support for that provision.
Senator Dibble.
One final comment. Mr. Chair, our goal ultimately is to make sure that the now $22 million presently that flows into the general fund comes into this fund for transportation purposes. I mean, that's what should happen. This motor vehicle lease tax should be used for transportation purposes, and then that would help this conversation a lot as well.
And is that part of the legislation?
Yes.
So, Mr. Chair, what we propose is that of the $32 million that flows into the general fund, that we retain $10 million, so making that only $22 million. We had made a play for the full 32. Target didn't support that, and so we shaved that back to $10 million.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, continuing on page 4 of the spreadsheet, on line 130, there is, similar to county state aid, there's an appropriation increase for municipal state aid. This is another flow through from the highway user tax fund according to a constitutional formula. So this is just a spending of the funds derived from the new revenues in the bill, and that's $99.4 million approximately for the biennium. And on lines 137 to 141 of the spreadsheet, these are other local roads appropriations that I just sort of lumped together for this purpose in the spreadsheet. These are not, these are all new appropriations, so there is no base amount. So to go over them briefly, lines 137 and 138 are appropriations from the, these newly created city streets and bridges accounts. And these accounts will receive revenue from two surcharges on motor vehicle transactions and from rededication of a general fund piece of a motor vehicle fee picked up by our target. And once the revenues come into these, those total revenues are split 50-50 between these city streets and bridges accounts. One is for small cities, and those are cities defined in the statute, at, in the new statute, as being not municipal state aid cities and ineligible for municipal state aid funds. And the larger cities would be those funds eligible for municipal state aids, but these amounts would be for non-state aid streets in those municipalities. And you can see that the each of the funds will receive $57.6 million approximately for the biennium. And line 139 is a one-time appropriation from the general fund for the local bridge replacement program. Line 140 is a governor's rec. That is an appropriation from the general fund of $2.5 million a year ongoing. These are for infrastructure activities related to the Safe Routes to School account, construction dollars as opposed to the maybe program management and administrative and planning and education costs that are covered in the non-infrastructure activities we saw earlier under the Office of Transit. Line 141 is a one-time appropriation to the Commissioner of Transportation from the general fund, $5 million to support construction, design, maintenance of highways on tribal lands. And moving on, there's a couple pieces under the agency management on 158 and 159. The first is that technical, basically technical change where this airport's appropriation, state airports fund appropriation, was moved actually into the aeronautics budget activity. And that's a difference of $50,000 a year picked up above. And then line 159 is, again, another purchasing power restoration change from the Trunk Highway Fund for agency services. And this is $2.3 million for the biennium. And a similar appropriation on line 169 of the spreadsheet on the next page for buildings, facilities projects, and $2.4 million for the biennium from the Trunk Highway. The next change item is on line 178. This is the last one for the department in the section. This is an existing appropriation of $600,000 a year from the Trunk Highway Fund for tort claims of the department. This has traditionally been appropriated to MMB. MMB and MnDOT have agreed that it might be more appropriately appropriated to MnDOT, so that's what you see here, and later in the spreadsheet you'll see a reduction to that appropriation to MMB. Okay, moving on. There's just one change item on the Metropolitan Council. As you probably know, the bill contains an increase to the Metropolitan Area Transit Sales Tax that goes to Metropolitan Council. This is resulting in a reduction to their general fund operations budget. What's left on the bottom line is those costs of operating the Metro Mobility Service. So as you'll see in on line 198 in the biennium, their appropriation is reduced by $39.4 million. However, the operations cost of Metro Mobility are increasing, so that reduction decreases in the tails, and that's 10.8 for the tails.
Could I just jump back to could you give me an example of a tort claim? Are those potholes that were not taken care of in an appropriate amount of time, or what, Senator Dibble?
Mr. Chair, so MnDOT is sued all the time for all kinds of reasons. Sometimes by contractors because of service delivery glitches and stuff happens. Sometimes by the public, because of these pothole issues, the potholes reported, and there's time left to remediate, and it's not, and then something happens, someone's axle gets broken, all kinds of things. Do you know? Yeah.
Does MnDOT reclaim any damages that when lights go down, when a car crashes into a freeway lamp, or one thing I see quite often on driving on 94 heading west is that almost on a weekly basis somebody plows through the center line and hits that fence, and you constantly see maintenance workers out there repairing the fence. So does MnDOT go and seek damages from the party who goes?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, yes. So you're to do that, if you're the person who crashed into something and damaged MnDOT property, your insurance is responsible.
Okay.
Matter of fact, that came up as a discussion in our committee because MnDOT wasn't moving quickly enough, and a couple years later we're filing those claims. So which is a good thing. I think it's good they're filing those claims. It would be better if they were to do so in a timely fashion. I had actually personal experience with that because my niece, when she turned 16, I shouldn't tell this, she's going to be embarrassed. I loaned her my car right after she got her driver's license, and she promptly crashed it, wrecked my car, but also severely damaged a tree, a boulevard tree in Minneapolis, and I was notified that should that tree die, my insurance would have a claim filed. So I kept an eye on that tree for many years. It's still doing quite well, and that big I watered it every day. So you still see the scar on the tree, but it's a lot bigger now, and it's going to survive.
Okay, thank you. All right, please go on.
Mr. Chair, continuing on page 6 of the spreadsheet, move on to the Department of Public Safety and their appropriations. Most of these, I believe, are the salaries and insurance pieces, the 1.8% compensation adjustment related to different funds. So you'll see those on line 211 and 212 related to the General Fund and Trunk Highway Fund appropriations to the Office of Communications. And those are respectively $6,000 and $33,000 for the biennium. Under public safety support, you'll see two additional related appropriations. Line 224 and 225, again, from the general fund and the trunk highway fund for different purposes in the public safety support budget activity. Those increases are $15,000 for the biennium from general fund and $246,000 from the trunk highway fund. I should also note at this point that the 1.8% is across the board, except when the governor's recommendation was to increase state patrol compensation by 3%. So some of the truck highway pieces you'll see are higher, especially in the admin and state patrol portions of the agency related to those activities. And back on line 223, this is a recommendation from the governor to fund a new position of labor relations manager to assist the director of human resources at the department. And it's an additional $130,000 a year from the general fund. There are no changes in the budget activity for technology and support services. On the next page, there's a number of changes to the state patrol program. First off, in patrolling highways, the bulk of state patrol. On line 249, you'll see a salaries and insurance adjustment related to trunk highway. Of $5.98 million for the biennium. On the next line is a salaries and insurance adjustment from the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. This is going to those individuals serving the Vehicle Crimes Unit. That Vehicle Crimes Unit investigates non-payment of registration taxes, motor vehicle sales taxes, and since those recouped revenues are deposited in the Highway User Tax Fund, the Highway User Tax Fund is what funds this unit. So the salary increases come out of the Highway User Tax Fund, and that's $41,000 for the biennium. The next is was a governor's recommendation to purchase one aircraft for the State Patrol, including a thermal imager for search and rescue missions and the like, as I understand it. The recommendation was $975,000 for that price, for the price of one airplane from the Trunk Highway Fund. The division recommendation is to fund $500,000 of that request.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
The reason we recommend only $500,000 out of the highway out of the Trunk Highway Fund for this purpose is because the plane is going to be used for purposes that are not related to highway safety. It's going to be used for other sorts of criminal justice, criminal investigation, and as well. So we would encourage the department to come up with other resources for to pay for the plane because it can be used for multiple purposes.
Okay, thank
Mr.
you.
Chair.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chair, and to that point, does the State Patrol then get reimbursed for those services if they're called out to Stearns County for some kind of a rescue, or do you know that? I don't know. Is that where the difference would be made up, Senator?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
I don't know.
I think we have somebody here from the State Patrol.
Sorry? I didn't mean to shut the program down here. It's just if we don't, we should.
Lieutenant Colonel Schoffer.
Welcome.
Chairman.
Please give your name for the record.
Shelley Schoffer, Lieutenant Colonel with the State Patrol. The aircraft that State Patrol uses, which is shared by other entities that need our services, we are not reimbursed for those law enforcement services.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chair, just a thought. Has it ever been thought about? I know it's a real valuable service for a county. I mean, it's certainly nice that state can come in and help, but are you called upon a lot? I mean, I don't know.
It's a fair amount. We have not explored, to my knowledge, the reimbursement from the county entities or the city entities that use us. So I don't know how much evaluation has been put in by the commissioner's office into that.
So, Mr. Chair, thank you for this. And it's interesting, is that when we were in the county business, we had a dive team, and the other county didn't have one, and they had a drowning or something, we would actually charge them. Not the earlier years, but in the latter years, it started to become quite expensive, you know, for the training and all the equipment. So it'd be something I'd like to talk to you about. Thanks. Thank you, Senator.
Hey, thank you.
Mr. Chair, yeah, that's Dibble. A similar concept in Minneapolis. Minneapolis has mutual aid agreements with the surrounding municipalities and our police and fire response and other emergency responders are available to our surrounding communities. And I don't know if we do a per-response reimbursement or we just have kind of standing contracts of how that works exactly, but we make sure that there's at least some sharing of resources for those purposes. So it's a good thought. Thank you, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Okay. Please go on.
Mr. Chair, continuing to line 252, this is a governor's rec. It allows the in language later in the bill supports this. It allows the commissioner of public safety to set the rate for state trooper escort services based on actual costs. Right now, a set amount is set in statute as the rate. It is not keeping up with inflation, apparently. DPS estimates that to cover the costs, the rate would generate an additional $150,000 a year. That amount is statutorily appropriated to DPS, and this change will prevent trooper escort service activities from being subsidized from other funds in the agency, particularly the Trunk Highway Fund that funds the bulk of State Patrol. Okay, next on line 262 is another salary and insurance bump from the Trunk Highway Fund for commercial vehicle enforcement, and that is $688,000 for the biennium. Under capital security, there are two change items. One, of course, salaries and insurance on line 270. That's from the general fund because the general fund funds capital security rather than Trunk Highway under State Patrol, and that's $332,000 for the biennium. The other change item on line 269 is related to an elimination of, right now, the capital security works under contract agreement with multiple agencies on the Capitol complex. And the proposal is to eliminate those contracts that provide individualized services for agencies and instead do sort of a blanket service, and that would require increasing this appropriation by 3.14 for the biennium to cover the costs that would go away from the contracts. Moving on to page 8, it's a number of change items under driving vehicle services. On line 284, this is the compensation piece for vehicle services. This is out of the special revenue vehicle services operating account that funds their activities. And into this account flow all the fees collected by the department, administrative fees and filing fees and the like. This bump is $782,000 for the biennium. There's also Governor's rec to create a data services unit. This is to provide legal advice and administration of the entire data practices program under DPS, or under DVS, I should say. And that amount is going to be $90,000 a year, and it's split in appropriation on line 285 to vehicle services and line 300 to driver services. So that's proportionally split between the two accounts. The next line is an additional operating adjustment to fund current FTEs and appropriations to, as I understand it, avoid layoffs in the area of vehicle services. This comes off the vehicle services operating account bottom line of another $1.2 million for the biennium. The next couple lines are related to the contract with that the department has with the Minnesota Department of Corrections for plate production and purchasing and distribution and the like. The first of these on line 287 is a request from the governor to appropriate more out of the vehicle services operating account to cover increased costs for this contract. That the amount charged for the plates is not covering the costs, and that's later in the bill. I'll get to that. And the next two are related to this. Historically, this appropriation has come out of the Highway User Tax Fund to fund the procurement of the plates with the Department of Corrections contract. It was the desire of the committee to sort of get those Highway User Tax Funds back into funding highways and out of the driver and vehicle services area. So that appropriation was eliminated on line 289 and instead made from the vehicle services operating account on line 288.
So, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
So what we're doing here is what happens presently is that the Department of Vehicle, Driver Vehicle Services contracts with Department of Corrections to produce the plates. They use those, they use dollars, appropriation that they get out of the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund to pay for the production of those plates. Then, of course, we as the public purchase those plates for presently $10. Every 7 years, we replace it. $6 for a regular plate, $10 for a special plate, and then they keep those dollars and they put those into the driver services or the vehicle services accounts, which didn't seem to make a lot of sense on its face. So then, when we had the conversation about making sure that those fees just is kind of a self-supporting activity rather than being subsidized by the Trunk Highway Fund, it turned out they weren't charging enough to do that. And so what we decided might be a wise course is to increase how much we pay for a plate when it's replaced, slow down that replacement schedule from every 7 years to every 10 years, and by doing that, we're able to keep those dollars in the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, not subsidize the production of those plates, and that's all self-supported through just a regular plate replacement fee. So we increase it to $12.50 every 10 years rather than $6 every 7 years. Does that make sense?
Yes, I think so. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr.
So it's a net return of $16.5 million to the Highway User Fund for highway user purposes rather than subsidizing plate production for the Department of Corrections.
Senator Dibble, is this a prison industries out of Stillwater?
Mr. Chair, yes. Okay. That's correct.
Thank you.
Okay.
Other questions from the committee?
Still doing our walk.
Yeah.
We're still, Chair, still walking through the spreadsheet. We're almost done.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, moving on to driver services, on line 299, again, salaries and insurance increase, again, from now the driver services operating account of $1.3 million for the biennium. Then there's the piece of the driver services piece of the data services unit I already talked about. The next line is 301 is one-time appropriations in the biennium related to a Senator Kemp proposal later in the bill requiring certain documents when a testing to insurance coverage at the department. So these are temporary FTEs to sort of get that ball rolling and how those documents are handled at the department, and that's $198,000 for the biennium.
So Ms. Sanders, so I like this, but I can't quite figure out why the cost is there. I realize it's not a big cost, but we change the license renewal to say, do you have insurance? Yes. And the name of your insurance carrier is Y.
62. Mr. Chair.
So why do we?
It's a good question. I don't actually know the answer. Driver and Vehicle Services tells us that if we're going to fill out a few more lines on a form, we actually don't show any documents. We just simply fill out some more information, the name of the insurance company, the insurance policy number, its expiration date. There's no actual production of documents to prove that. It's just an attestation, expansion of the current attestation. But apparently it'll cost $200,000 a year, every biennium. Do you remember why?
Is it the computerization of the information on the DL?
So, Mr. Chair, this all came up about as a product of the work that was done over the interim by the Motor Vehicle Insurance Verification Task Force. They came out with quite a number of recommendations. This is a first little mini step towards motor vehicle insurance verification, so we have higher rates of compliance.
And as I've indicated, I'm not complaining. It's going to actually save myself and my office some time.
But apparently not to read those three additional lines, it's going to cost $200,000 every 2 years. I mean, we don't have to fund this, but it's an appropriation of existing resources in a special revenue fund that carries about a $20 million. For driver services, they carry quite a balance.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Senator Peterson.
On this issue, the concern I think that was expressed in committee, of course, is that the consumers are not going to know about this ahead of time, and so we had some discussion about how the department was going to let people know. As you know, many people, particularly elder, that don't want to do this online and that type of thing, if it's available, go in to renew their license, Mr. Chair, and if they don't bring their insurance information with them, they certainly don't remember the policy number. They might know the name of the company, and the system is on your honor. But the concern we had is that our state staff is going to be turning people away at the counter when they're expecting to get their license renewed.
Okay, thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
Thank you, Senator Peter. I forgot about that part of the discussion, and I think some of these resources are going to be used for that purpose. People don't have to produce their documents, but they certainly have to have the information, particularly if they show up on purpose. So it's going to be a real pain in the neck if they show up and they don't have their policy number and their expiration date memorized. So, of course, they're going to want it with them. So we want to make sure that as few of those sorts of incidences occur. So there's going to be a period of trying to inform people well ahead of time to bring that information with them so they can write it down on the form.
Mr. Chair, the last item is on line 302 under driver services is change in appropriation from the trunk highway fund that's been made for, as long as I've been here. I don't know the exact history of it, but it's a $1,000 a year appropriation from the trunk highway fund. As I understand it, this is related to letters mailed by the department in connection with license suspension. related to pump drive-offs. It's my understanding that the appropriation is not really being used, and it's sort of a cleanup to get all highway funds out of the Driver and Vehicle Services program. So that would be a reduction of $2,000 for the biennium. And the last two pieces under public safety are on lines 316 and 323, and those are salaries and insurance adjustments related to the Office of Traffic Safety. That's from the Trunk Highway Fund for Traffic Safety because that's what their base appropriation is from, and pipeline safety from the special revenue account, which funds pipeline safety, and that fund is from assessments on pipeline companies to fund those activities. There's a couple of change items for other agencies, which is unusual for us, but the first is that shift on line 335 is a shift of the tort claims appropriation to MnDOT from MMB, so you see the reduction of $600,000 a year from Trunk Highway. The others are on lines 342 and 343. 342 is a statutory appropriation, showing it here because it goes against our general fund target. These are casino aids payments related to the increase in the gross receipts tax. Let's see if I have any information on it. This was a change item that was in the governor's bill as well, and required by the Department of Revenue. This is existing statute on aids that need to be made to tribes with casinos on their lands, as I understand it, related to an increase in state taxes. And that will be $130,000 from the general fund for the biennium. The next line on line 343 is tax interaction related to the increase in vehicle registration taxes. Paying an increase in vehicle registration taxes might increase your itemized deductions and might increase the income tax revenues that the state has to pay out to citizens. So that is an estimation of I'm on a whole different line. This is administrative costs for the department for the fuels tax. This is we already make an appropriation from the Highway User Tax Fund. Well, the state government budget does, actually, from the Highway User Tax Fund to the Petroleum Division of the Department of Revenue to administer the gas tax. This is the increased appropriation to pick up administrative costs for administering the new gross receipts tax. The next is a small change on line 350. These are expenses, an appropriation to the Legislative Coordinating Commission for expenses related to the Road User Charge Working Group. That's Senator Franzen and Senator Dibble proposal set up later in the policy part of the bill. And that's just one-time appropriations of $16,000 for expenses in the biennium. On line 357, explain this. On line 357, there's an appropriation to the Department of Natural Resources, and there's a similar appropriation on line 364 on the next page to the Board of Water and Soil Resources. This is to fund the costs of a study that the two agencies will participate in to examine the feasibility of the state taking over the 404 permitting processes of the Clean Water Act. And I believe that's related, someone can correct me, to dredging and fill being dumped in U.S. waters.
So Mr. Chair, a number of states have taken over. This is a federal permitting process that would work in parallel and tandem with some of our roadway construction. So it's an examination of whether or not it's feasible and advisable to have that permitting authority delegated to the state of Minnesota. Whether or not it makes sense, we need to take a look at it. It's a somewhat complicated question to answer. And so this is being paid for out of some administrative dollars that are set aside in the County State Aid Highway Fund. It's an attempt to streamline and make permitting more efficient, wrap the federal permitting process into our state permitting, water permitting process when we're doing road construction.
Then, Mr. Chair and Senators, there's a quite lengthy section on revenues in this bill. I will go through it as quickly as I can. If you look on line 387, you'll see the estimated revenues from the gross receipts tax under the Senate plan, and those flow into the Highway User Tax Fund, shown as a revenue to that fund of $787.1 million for the biennium. The next line, 360 or 388, is the revenue is flowing into highway user tax from the changes made to vehicle registration taxes in the bill, and that's 191.6 for the biennium. The next line, $4.1 million for the biennium, is an increased revenue related to the proposal to make late payment for a late payment penalty for registration tax. The next line, there are a number of changes to the MVEST allocation, the motor vehicle sales tax allocation in this bill. Right now, under current law, the highway user tax receives 60%, Greater Minnesota, or Metro Transit receives 36%, and Greater Minnesota Transit receives 4%. The proposal is to double the Greater Minnesota share to 8%, so 2% is shaved off from highway user tax and Metro Transit's allocation. And you'll see right here is the change in revenue of $30.6 million for the biennium to the highway user tax because of that change. 391 is Senator Kiffmeyer provision, I believe, related to registration tax refunds and a grace period for getting a refund of your registration tax under certain circumstances. And that's a small loss of revenue to the fund of $95,000 for the biennium. The next line is Senator Coonan provision allowing a motor vehicle sales tax exemption for local governments for certain road maintenance equipment, snow plows, et cetera. This will be a change to both transit funds and the highway user tax fund. Right here you'll see a change of 3.6 for the biennium. It's $1.2 million a year, but it's doubled up in fiscal year 16 because the provision is made retroactive to fiscal year 16, so that will count against the fund as well. Or, did I say 16? 15. It's made retroactive to 15, yes. Okay. The next on line 393 is, I believe, a Senator Peterson provision. It's a change to the driveway in transit plates. This is for motor carriers. Transporting vehicles across Minnesota and some changes to those to that permitting language, and this would be a small revenue decrease to the fund of $70,000 for the biennium. And then the next line, 394, is just the net transfer out of highway user tax per the constitutional formula. So all these revenues flow into the highway user tax fund. And then apart from some appropriations that we saw earlier in the bill, the rest would flow out to the funds listed beneath. So there's a 963.9 revenue shift out for the biennium, and then those are picked up on the next three lines, 395 to 397, by the Trunk Highway Fund, the CASA Fund, and the Municipal State Aid Fund. 398 is just showing the revenue related to the previous spending we saw on state road construction for additional federal funding for trunk highways. And that was, again, 97.3 for the biennium. The next three lines, 399 to 401, are related to redistribution of the motor vehicle sales tax. We looked briefly at the run, and what that does is takes an additional $10 million a year from the general fund. As you can see on line 401 from the general fund set aside, it eliminates you'll see on line 400. It eliminates the transit assistance appropriate or allocation from that to Greater Minnesota Transit, and then the county state aid highway fund for the five collar counties, or actually, I'm sorry, the seven metro counties at this point, would pick up all of those changes in revenue. So CASA would receive an additional $63.1 million for the biennium. The next three lines, 402 to 404, are related to what I discussed earlier, the governor's rec for changing the allocation of motor vehicle lease sales tax to keep the general fund whole because the transportation funds were getting too much of the tax rate. So this just shows the revenue adjustments to the general fund, the CASA fund, and the transit assistance fund for MnDOT on those lines. 405 is the other piece, the pickup of Greater Minnesota Transit from the change to MVEST allocation. This is an additional 4% of MVEST for Greater Minnesota Transit, and that comes to $30.6 million a year. For the biennium. And then line 406 is another piece of the Senator Coonan provision for MVEST exemption for local governments, and that's the change in MVEST revenue for the Transit Assistance Fund for Greater Minnesota Transit related to that. Excuse me. The next two lines, 407 and 408, are showing general fund transfer into the active transportation accounts that would go to Greater Minnesota Transit, Bike Ped, and Safe Routes to School infrastructure, or non-infrastructure, I'm sorry. And line 408 is showing the revenue gain to the special revenue fund, picking that up, and is appropriated earlier in the spreadsheet. Yes. The next several lines are related to changes in DVS filing fees and surcharges, and these are the amounts. These are the revenues that are going to the newly created City Streets and Bridges accounts. You'll see on line 409 there is an additional $10 surcharge on vehicle transaction filing fees, certain filing fees, and that is an addition of $45 million a year. To the special revenue funds. Line 410 is an additional, it doesn't say it, but it's an additional $10 surcharge on a motor vehicle title transfer. And that comes out to an additional $12 million a year for the funds to split. And lines 411 and 412 is a reallocation of an existing piece of the vehicle registration renewal filing fee. $350 of that fee goes to the general fund, and this would reallocate that to the special revenue funds for cities. That's relatively smaller, about $400,000 a year shift. The next is related to earlier the spending, the statutory spending we saw for land conveyance of surplus right-of-way parcels for MnDOT. These are the revenues that would flow in from the increased activity. Line 414 is what Senator Dibble mentioned earlier. These are assessments on the railroads for rail safety initiatives. This is a governor recommendation of $32.5 million a year to the special revenue fund, $1.4 million of which a year is now in the Senate position as funding the Rail Safety Administration Office and MnDOT's Office of Freight. Metropolitan Council revenues, the first line on 417 shows the Metro Transit sales tax increase in the bill at 0.75%. The governor's proposal was at 0.5%, and you can see the difference in revenues there of about, in the last column, about $175 million difference for the biennium. The next line is, again, related to the MVEST allocation statutory change, shifting those revenues to Greater Minnesota Transit. So that's the amount that the Metro Transit Assistance account would lose in revenue from that. And then the last piece.
Mr. Chair?
Sorry. Oh, Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, the Metro Transit sales tax increase, are you talking about on fares? Well, where does that increase come?
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonhoff, that's just a general sales tax. So similar to now, the quarter cent that we have now, this will bring it to a full cent.
Gotcha. A full cent.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So it increased by 0.75 cents to a full cent.
Can you quickly go back to the rail assessment?
Line 414.
The new office that's set up, and what will be their function and power?
Mr. Chair, there's a description of it in the statute. Do you know where that is?
Oh, we can, if we're going to,
yeah,
we'll probably cover that when we go through the language. Then.
Right, right. So, okay. It's a governor's recommendation. It would have a number of powers. One of them is safety and other stuff.
All right.
Other stuff relating to freight rail in Minnesota.
Please continue.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Peterson.
I just had a question on that issue. Were you referring to line 414, the railroad assessments for rail?
Yes, but I was kind of wanting a bigger picture than just the assessment.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, the question I had for Senator Dibble, I know you had mentioned that was the governor's recommendations, but I don't see he's got any funding for that in his column there.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, I think the governor had recommended general fund for that purpose, and rather than using general fund, we're using some of the assessment for the purpose of the office.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Please continue.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I believe what's left is under the Department of Public Safety. On line 422, this is what we talked about earlier. This is a reduction of forecast-based HUTD or highway user tax appropriation to vehicle services. So this is additional revenue to flow on the formula for trunk highways and county and state aid roads, or county and municipal state aid roads. 423 is Senator Torres Ray provision that allows owners of towed recreational vehicles the option to register their vehicles for 3 years and not just one. And this is a sort
of trailers.
What did I say?
Just the trailers.
Yes, just the trailers.
Just the trailers.
Mr. Chair, yes. And this shows a revenue shift because the bulk of the revenue then would come in the first year that this is an option of roughly $904,000 to the Highway User Tax Fund for registration, and then would be reduced by half of that in each of the following 2 years as people don't register in those years and come back in the next third year. So, but it's across biennia, so it shows a gain in the biennial total. Just because of the timing of that provision. Line 424 is a fee increase. These are the rolled up fee increases for license plates that we'll see the provisions for later in the bill. This is what Senator Dibble mentioned, the increase of regular plates from $6 to $12.50 and special plates from $10 to $12.50. And this is designed to cover the true cost of purchasing these license plates. That revenue will flow into the Special Revenue Fund Vehicle Services Operating Account and will help supplement the reduction from the highway user tax in that area.
Okay.
The next line is showing the revenue from the increased state trooper escort rate. This is line 425 that we talked about earlier. That's a statutory appropriation now, and that's $150,000 estimated a year. And line 426, this allows this is an IFTA reinstatement fee. If the International Fuel Tax Agreement or administration, I'm sorry, I can't remember the acronym off the top of my head. It's International Fuel Tax Agreement, I believe. When the license is revoked for whatever reason in statute, whether it's not filing documentation or not non-payment of something, when it is reinstated, currently there is not allowed for a fee in statute. And so those administrative costs has to come from other department appropriations. So this allows for a fee, and that will recoup those costs of $40,000 a year. The next line is similar. It allows for a filing fee for removing and clearing conditional registrations when the clearing and removing is requested by motor vehicle dealers. This covers the cost of processing. Again, this is administrative costs that currently do not have a fee to support them. And this is This is only in the, I believe this was an agency bill, but it's only in the Senate provision in this bill. It's $387,000 gain per year to the Special Revenue Fund.
Mr. Chair, this was an initiative of the thank you, Mr. Chair, of the deputy registrars when a temporary registration is obtained by a dealer because of incomplete information or, you know, they're somewhere along the process, but they need a conditional registration. When they've come back to finalize that registration, they typically haven't paid anything for that, yet the deputy registrars incur a cost, and so this is allowing for that cost, for that clearing and that completion of the conditional registration to be captured.
Mr. Chair and Senators, that's correct. I apologize. And the next one is related to that as well on line 427. I believe that was also, or 428, Deputy Registrar initiative. Because the Deputy Registrars and the Department have to charge the same fees, there will be some gain to the Department as well. So this is another filing fee that does not occur now that will cover processing costs related to the IFTA motor carrier fuel tax licenses, and that will bring in an additional $50,000 a year. The next is related to Senator Peterson's provision we talked about earlier, driveway in transit plate changes. These are, you know, changes to transporting vehicles across the state with a driveway in transit license. And that was there was a small reduction in revenue to the Highway User Tax Fund earlier, and there's an additional reduction in revenue to the Special Revenue Fund of an additional $35,000 a year because those revenues are split between these two funds currently. Finally, on line 430, there's a general fund provision only in the governor's side. This was related to an increased fine for second and subsequent violations of texting while driving. This provision is now being carried in the judiciary budget bill, so you only see it on the governor's rec side of our spreadsheet. The last two pieces I have are related to the Department of Revenue. I started to talk about one of them earlier. One is increased petroleum refunds to tribal governments. These are agreements that the Department of Revenue and the state have with certain tribal governments to make refunds for taxes paid, and this will relate to the increased gross receipts tax revenue and getting refunds back by agreement to those tribal governments. And that is an interaction that the Department of Revenue has put forth at $4.24 million for the biennium, and that comes from the general fund, obviously. And then the next one, as I spoke about briefly earlier, is due to increased registration taxes that will lead to increased income tax refunds as people claim those in itemized deductions, and that is going to be a tax interaction of 3.3 in decreased general fund revenue per the biennium. And that, Mr. Chair, is all I have on this.
Okay. Can we go back to line 389? And that's the late payments for registration tax. When you look under the previous or the current biennium, there is nothing. And then you're picking it up in the next biennium, I believe, at $4.125 million. So, is this a new tax that's being applied, or is the current tax going into the general fund?
Mr. Chair, there is not currently a penalty for paying registration taxes late. This is a Senator Sieben initiative, I believe, to actually incur a penalty for paying your registration tax late, and because it's considered a part of registration tax, would flow as registration tax does into the highway user fund. So there is no comparison to the previous biennium because it is a new
provision. And is the $4.25 million based on the current late registration numbers, or is this an estimate?
Mr. Chair, there was a fiscal note done on this provision. I don't have it in front of me, but I believe that was, an estimate by the department of how many late registrations they see and how that might change. I'm sorry, I don't have it in front of me. But.
All right.
And
thank
Mr.
you.
Mr. Chair, we'll go through it. There is language, so we'll go through it in the language portion. When Ms. Berezovsky does our walkthrough next, but the summary is it's $25 per month, capped at $100.
All right. Okay, so Senator Dibble or whoever is going to go through the language.
Mr. Chair, I have Ms. Berezovsky that can walk us through our language elements. Oh, Mr. Chair, we do have an amendment, so maybe we should do that first. Is your walkthrough? All right. So I think all pretty much technical changes.
Let the record reflect that there was a quorum.
Okay. So I'll move the A25. We can explain the amendment before we adopt it.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, if you like.
Senate Council, the A25 amendment. We'll hand it out, and then you can explain it.
So, Ms. Boyd can explain it. Why don't we have her go ahead and start explaining it while it's coming around?
All right, why don't you go ahead and explain it?
Mr. Chair, thank you. You get to hear my voice a little bit more.
If you can speak right into that microphone, that'll be helpful.
I will.
Helpful.
I'll try to go through this as quickly as I can. Line 1.3 is a provision related to the request of the governor to purchase two new state airplanes. They were going to sell some existing airplanes and put those proceeds toward the new purchases. Because the Senate recommended one plane instead of two, they wanted the language changed to say the proceeds of the sale and existing airplane because they only plan to sell one. The next provisions are related to This is related to a Senator Kiffmeyer provision that was put in the bill in division allowing $143,000 to be spent on some repairs of track, railroad track in Hugo. The amendment had the amount coming from the existing base in freight, and that existing base is only $256,000 a year. So the choice was made to take that appropriation instead from the rail service improvement account in the special mm-hmm. revenue fund. This is what, known as the Mercy account, which can be used by the commissioner to make improvements on rail lines. And this is a grant from this account. So those lines just relate to changing that. And lines 1.4 and 1.9 are related. This is changing the rail office appropriation from those railroad assessments, the $1.4 million. This is changing it to a statutory appropriation, so allowing for the creation of the office in the statute regarding the assessment and allowing that the cost for this office will not exceed the request of $1.4 million a year. So it's just deleting it from the direct appropriations and moving it to the statutory language. Lines 110 and 111 allows – this is a sentence added to the appropriation for environmental mitigation, that increase of $1.1 million a year from trunk highway base in planning and delivery for state roads. And this allows flexibility in the biennium if there's more demand on these funds in one year more than another. It replaces it just adds a line saying that either year, the appropriation for either year is available. Line 112 fills in some blanks that we were carrying related to the transfer of debt service amounts to the state bond fund for the new trunk highway bond appropriations or bond authorizations. These were just numbers. I was waiting to fill in until I had them confirmed, and these are the correct numbers, I believe. Lines 113 through 116 it replaces language in the state aid appropriation, county state aid and municipal state aid. Those appropriations used to say that they were available until expended. And it's our understanding that we are trying to eliminate those lines. This is the suggestion at this point to allow for a cancellation after 6 years after the appropriation. This is to allow, because these are grants to locals to encumber for projects and they're not always ready to have the matching funds or have the project ready, this allows some lag time to get those projects on board with the appropriation. Lines 117 through 120 are just a correction of a rounding error, and those relate to the city streets and bridges accounts. It's a difference of $100,000 a year less for each account per year. Line 121 is a change to the appropriation to local bridge replacement program. There was $11 million in the division report, and in the spreadsheet we just went through, this has changed to $10.75 million just to keep within our general fund target and move some monies around a little bit. Line 122 and 123, this is just correcting a mistake, I believe, in the safe routes to school infrastructure. Amounts. It's intended as an ongoing appropriation. This is deleting the this is a one-time appropriation language because it is not. Lines 124 and 125 is a correction allowing spending of the compensation change item for the vehicle crimes unit. Those new numbers just weren't picked up in the rider language. Line 126 is an increased line 126 through 129 is an increased appropriation from driver services related to Senator Champion's driving privileges only license provision in the bill. Right now, we have a fiscal note in process on the amendment. However, at this point, this is the best estimate cost based on the fiscal note from the same language 2 years ago. So that's a $15,000 change. Lines 130 through 22 are a change to the $270,000 appropriation to the Board of Water and Soil Resources and Commissioner of Natural Resources. It was because it was one appropriation made to two agencies, it was just thought it'd be better to make it more clear that it was split 50-50, and that's all that language does. And then the next line deletes the not needed language after that. The next lines, 2.4 through 2.8, relate to estimates we've received from MnDOT since division that covers MnDOT costs of the working group on road user charge. And this is an estimate from the department on their administrative expenses, including the cost of consultants. And those are from the general fund. Those are from the general fund, one-time appropriations. Lines 2.9 through 2.12 are related to the trunk highway bonding. This was just inadvertently left out. It's standard program delivery language related to trunk highway bonds, allowing the department to use up to 17% of the amount each year for program delivery related to the projects. The next big section, from 213 all the way to 4.2, this is language governing the transfer of a portion of gas tax revenues to various DNR funds. And these just include a reference to the new gross receipts tax on motor fuels to make it analogous to how the gas tax refunds are handled. These were in the governor's recs and were just initially left out of our language, so those are added back in.
So there weren't any changes in terms of that split? Okay.
This is all of the you know, all the off-highway vehicle, all that stuff that doesn't – they use gas, but they don't pay into the highway user fund. They use it for trails and things like that.
Okay.
Line 4.3 is, again, related. This is the statutory appropriation change for the Rail Safety Administration Office. You'll see the language now says not to the creation of the office not to exceed $1.4 million each year. So. And the last two is just a technical change for an appropriation. It's for a study on an agency, and it just makes clear which agency the study is examining. It just said the department before, and we added transportation. So.
Okay, on the A25 amendment, any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted.
So, Mr. Chair, we'll try to zip through the language because I know we want to get through this before we go up to session. So Ms. Berezovsky will zip us here. We'll zip us along.
Mr. Chair and members, I will start with Article 2 and move on through the rest of the division report. Article 2 authorizes $1 billion of trunk highway bonding and $1 million for bonds.
Mr. Chair, what page?
Excuse me.
I'm sorry.
You could give the page as you move through it, it's very helpful. Thank you.
Certainly. Excuse me. It starts on page 18. Article 2 at the bottom, and moves to the next couple of pages. So there's $1 billion trunk highway bonding authorization. $800 million of that is for the Corridors of Commerce program administered by MnDOT, and that is paid out over 4 years. And $200 million is for the Transportation Economic Development Program, also spent on trunk highway projects by MnDOT that are selected for the purposes of this program. And that's paid out over 4 years, and then $1 million to management and budget for bond sale expenses. Page 21 begins Article 3 on the gross receipts tax. And this is a new tax that is imposed under this article. It's imposed on the wholesale business of selling the means or substance for propelling vehicles on highways, and this is constitutional language. This tax is authorized in the Constitution, and it is dedicated to the Highway User Fund. It has the same dedication as the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. The tax is imposed at 6.5% of gross receipts at the distributor level, and Commissioner of Revenue is directed to convert that tax rate into cents per gallon for ease of administration and ease of applying for refunds and so on. So the conversion happens once a year. It's based upon previous average gasoline and other fuels prices per gallon. The conversion will show the greater of either 6.5% of the average receipts or 6.5%, assuming a $2.50 per gallon price of gasoline. And so that acts as a floor. It's about 16 cents per gallon. The remaining sections in that article are mostly just conforming the language and adding references to this gross receipts tax into the various provisions of the Motor Fuels Tax Chapter 296A. Moving on to Article 4, and that begins on page 25. That is contains some changes to the vehicle registration tax. The first component of the change is changing the base tax of $10 to $20, and that happens in 2018. The additional tax over that base tax will change in September of 2015, and the change is that the 1.25% of value that's then applied to the depreciation schedule changes to 1.5% of base value. The depreciation schedule does not change.
And it's a 10-year cycle until it reaches its bottom threshold?
Yeah, so that's correct.
It's a 10-year depreciation schedule, just if folks don't recall that.
Okay. Again, if you could just mention what page you're on, that would be helpful.
Yes. Okay, Article 4 began on the bottom of page 25, and that is the vehicle registration tax article. The Article 5 begins on page 27, and that is the Metropolitan Transit Improvement Area sales tax. And there are two parts to that article, again beginning on 27. The first part amends current law that imposes a 1/4 cent sales tax in the it's available to all of the counties in the metropolitan area. Five of the seven counties chose to impose that tax, and there are some changes in the administration and the eligible uses of the current 1/4 percent sales tax. There currently is a GEARS committee that operates under CTIB. CTIB is the county's Transit Improvement Board that administers the current 1/4 cent sales tax. GEARS is a committee underneath CTIB that evaluates grant proposals. And CTIB is eliminated, and that happens CTIB is not eliminated. GEARS is eliminated, and that's those references occur from pages 27 to 29.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that, you mentioned something about that this is eligible for the seven-county metro area and that five counties have subscribed. Who are the counties that haven't?
Mr. Chair, the counties that are not participating are Carver and Scott.
Thank you.
The changes in the eligible uses for the current 1/4 cent are on page 30. And there is a mention in the eligible uses of 100% of net operating cost for Robert Street Transitway and Riverview Corridor Transitway, 50% of net operating cost for other transitways that have commenced operation before September 30 of 2015.
Mr. Chair, could either Ms. Berezovsky or Senator Dibble, could you explain why that is, why it's 100% of the operating cost for Robert Street and Riverview and 50% for the others?
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Steven, that came at the request of CTIB itself, and the reason for that is because both Robert Street and Riverview are CTIB initiatives of their own outside of the transportation policy plan. So this comes at the request of CTIB itself because they want to fully fund both the capital and operating for Robert Street and Riverview Corridor. The 50% above that, that's the existing agreement. That's basically 50% of the operating for Hiawatha and Central Corridor.
Mr. Chair, then moving on, at the bottom of page 30 begins all new language, and this is the new component to the metropolitan area sales tax. So this tax is imposed by by the legislature. It's not at the election of the counties, but it is imposed on the same five counties only that are participating in the first quarter cent. The rate of the new tax is 0.75%. It's on the same sales and uses that are covered under the current quarter cent. So the effect of it is to raise the tax in the five counties to 1 cent. The 8.5% of the net proceeds of the tax will be given to CTIB to spend for the purposes that we just looked at, and the remaining amount of the proceeds will go to the Metropolitan Council. And there are a number of purposes for which that money is to be spent by the council, debt service being the first, the second being an amount to each county that that's equal to 1/8 of the net proceeds raised in that county, and the counties can flex those proceeds to transportation projects as long as they have a nexus to transit or transit-oriented development. So this would be at the choice of the county. Hennepin County is restricted to using its 1/8 cent for transit purposes only. And then on page 32, subdivision 7 lays out all of the purposes for which the Metropolitan Council can spend the tax proceeds. And the council is required to pay operating and capital costs to preserve and expand bus service and other transit service. The council will pay 100% of net operating costs of arterial bus rapid transit and 50% of the operating costs of other transitways. So that fits in with the current quarter cent CTIB requirement of 50% of operations. Then the council will expand transit by an average annual rate of 4%, and that's expansion of service. They will develop additional transit ways and streetcar systems, maintain affordable transit fares, and upgrade transit shelters. They will give grants of $390,000 a year to transportation management organizations in cities of the first class, and $1.5 million to replacement service providers. Those are the suburban opt-outs for a demonstration project where they will connect cities not of the first class using replacement service. There will be a grant to the Center for Transportation Studies, and 10% of the revenues of the taxes will be used as grants to local units for bicycle, trail and pedestrian infrastructure, safe routes to school, and active transportation programs. Then, moving on to Article 6, that begins at the bottom of page 33. And this is a variety of sections. I will try not to pause too long on any of them, but to just give you an idea of at least what's in here. So the first section imposes a surcharge of $10 on the motor vehicle transfer fee that goes to the fee itself goes to the Environmental Fund, and it will continue to do that. The $10 surcharge will be used for city streets, half for larger cities and half for smaller cities that do not get state aid. Section 2 is a redistribution of 5% of the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. The Constitution has a formula for distribution, but it also provides that no more frequently than every 6 years, the legislature can apportion 5% of that fund. And the way that it will be spent under this bill for the next at least 6 years will be 30.5% to town roads, and this is on page 34, 16% to town bridges, 10% to county municipal accounts, and 43.5% to the municipal state aid street fund.
Mr. Chair? I think I was recognized.
How is it that only every 6 years the legislature can assign that? Each legislature is not able to encumber the next, and obviously that's a two-year cycle. Could you walk us through that?
Mr. Chair, Senator, now that's a constitutional constraint, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so the way the Higher Easter Tax Issue Fund is set up, you got 5% that comes off the top for these purposes, and you can set that purpose only once every 6 years, and that's dictated to us by the Constitution.
Mr. Chair, and I would just add to that because there is a formula in the Constitution, it could be seen as very inflexible, and I think that this every 6 year potential of redistribution add some flexibility to the constitutional formula so that the legislature can respond to where the needs might be that aren't adequately addressed by the constitutional formula.
The constitutional formula being the 62299 for the rest of the highway user tax distribution fund. So this allows us some flexibility in the HUTDF. A little bit, but some. But locked in for 6 years.
And Mr. Chair, thank you. Continue on page 35. These next few sections are an attempt to respond to the turnback needs that exist for trunk highways that are no longer needed for trunk highway purposes to be fixed up and maintained and then turned back to either the county state aid system or the municipal state aid system. So accounts are created for that purpose, and there is a legislative finding that restoration of trunk highways for this purpose is a trunk highway purpose. And as Ms. Boyd indicated, trunk highway funds are made available for this purpose in the budget. These amounts will be appropriated. There is a direction to the department to submit with their biennial budget submission the amounts needed for these funds. Section 7 is a change, and this is on page 36. It's a change in the way the CASA, the County State Aid Highway Fund, is apportioned, and all of the various elements that go into the division between the apportionment sum and the excess sum are stricken, and a percentage division is substituted, 68% under the apportionment sum and 32% under the distribution amount. Beginning with Section 8, and then there are a couple other interspersed sections. These reflect the change from $10 to $12.50 for a set of license plates, and this is an attempt to capture more fully the cost of producing the plate.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Chair. Senator Dibble, how did the percentages going back on Section 7, how did you arrive at the percentages for changing from subtracting the excess sum to a 68% and a 32%?
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, that captures roughly the amount, if I'm not mistaken, and Ms. Boyd can correct me. So this was arrived at, this was part of the conversation that goes back to 2008 when we did the small gas tax increase. The whole distinguishing between apportionment and excess goes back, so excess sum was the amount attributable to the additional gas tax that was raised in 2008. Since that time, there's been a lot of discussion about, rather than getting into this very, very complicated calculation every year, let's just kind of establish a set amount. The short version of this is the result of all 87 counties negotiating and debating and with a unified voice, they brought forward this recommendation to the legislature that we lock down at 68% under the old formula, 32% under the new formula. And if you want to know what the formulas are?
Mr. Chair and committee, just to go over this briefly, there's the apportionment sum under county state aid, and that is
we call that old money.
Old money, and that has been in statute for quite a while. This money is split. The sum is taken. 10% is split equally between the counties. 10% their proportional vehicle registrations in the counties. 30% their proportional lane mileage in the counties, and 50% based on the construction money needs in the counties, and that is done through a involved process with county engineers and a screening board at MnDOT. So that's what the department does for that. And then the excess sum is a portion.
So new money.
This is new money from 2008 bill. This is registration at 40% split proportionally between the counties, and 60% of it split by money needs among the counties.
But, Mr. Chair, all money will now be apportioned. So even the money that we might raise this year would go into that 68-32 formula division.
Thank
you. It wouldn't be old and new anymore, per se, because all new money, some would flow through the old formula and some would flow through the new formula.
Mr. Chair, I realized I skipped over something here. On page 36, section 6 is a Senator Western provision that requires the Commissioner of Transportation in the budget submission to estimate the amount that could be attributable to sales tax for materials purchased by contractors and subcontractors, but that's included in a lump sum contract. So, and then that amount is supposed to be appropriated back to the department. And this is in connection with a sales tax exemption that's coming later for MnDOT. Then, skipping over the CASA that was just discussed, beginning on page 37 with a couple of interspersed sections on different subjects are the $10 to $12.50 increase in plate fees. But pausing for just a moment on section 9, that is a Senator Kiffmeyer provision that allows an owner of a vehicle to have registration canceled and a full refund of registration paid within the first 10 days of the registration period. Okay, then I think from page 37, because we have special plates, each one has its own section or subdivision in law, we have to have a number of sections here that we'll change those plate fees from 10 to $12.50. And that really goes all the way to section 29, which is on about page 50, 29 and 30.
Page 49.
Okay, page, thank you, page 49. But actually, that's just conforming language to section 30, which begins on page 50. And that... that clarifies that, no, excuse me, that imposes a, section 30 on page 50 imposes a $10 surcharge, a new surcharge, on the vehicle registration renewal fee. And the rest, other than, let's see, a $10 filing fee also on motor carrier fuel tax licenses. And the proceeds of the surcharge go to the small and larger city street and bridges accounts that were referenced before. Also, there on a vehicle transfer fee, there is a $3.50 component that goes to the general fund, and that is being redirected to the city street accounts. Okay. Section 32 on page 52 clarifies that this conditional vehicle registration fee, and Senator Dibble spoke about this before. Section 33 establishes the city streets and bridges accounts that receive the amounts from these new surcharges and redirected fees. Section 34 on page 53 is a Senator Western provision that exempts the Department of Transportation from payment of sales tax on its purchases, effective July 1, 2019.
Can I just... thank you. excuse me. This is relates back to Section 6 as well. Do you have an amount on that? So this would be a cost to the general fund, I would assume.
Mr. Chair and Senators, the estimated amount of that of those provisions is about $23 million a year from the general fund.
Right. Thank you.
Which, obviously, Mr. Chair, we didn't have in our target, and so hence the delayed effective date, so we don't have to pick it up. But it will go into effect if we don't find the money in 4 years. So, but the idea, of course, is that we're subsidizing the highway user tax distribution fund with general fund through these sales taxes.
We'll find out.
Right. I was just, Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering if that was like new construction exemption, but what this is just actually a rerouting of the sales tax.
Yeah. So I'm sorry. Supporting the general fund with highway user fund. Yeah.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Chair.
Oh, sorry. Excuse me.
Mr. Chair.
Sorry about that.
With regard to the Westrum provision that puts a tax on or tax exemption for 2019 in July, which Senator Lurie pointed out is really then fiscal 2020, how are we able to allow a change like that to be even off the spreadsheet and captured here?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, we only capture our current biennium and our tails.
Right.
Yeah, this is outside of the tails start.
So, Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, how do we make a change? I mean, I haven't seen us do that where we actually change the law to so far out there we can't even capture it in our tails.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, I've seen it happen a number of times as a way of making a change in law that
not
would go into effect in a delayed basis. The future legislature can undo it if they feel like they're not going to actually have the money to support it. But it's a way of changing the fiscal impact of a certain particular practice. We didn't have the target to do so. Probably not, I've seen it happen. I don't know if it's advisable or not. It's not binding on a future legislature because any future legislature can do what it wants.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, I'm surprised that Mr. Nauman didn't go, wah, because he doesn't. I've tried that in other bills and have not been allowed to do that. So I'm surprised.
Maybe Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, maybe he will now.
I don't think he's listening. Lucky you, Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble.
Sarah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, see?
Go ahead.
Ms. Brzezowski.
Mr. Chair, on the bottom of 54 is Section 35, which has really already been discussed, motor vehicle lease sales tax redistribution. Section 36 is on page 55 is the Senator Coonan provision exempting motor vehicle sales tax of local government purchases of road maintenance vehicles. And this relates to the motor vehicle sales tax, not the general sales tax. And it's retroactive to June 30, 2014. Section 37, which is, let's see here, 37 is on page 58. And this is a redistribution of the MVEST proceeds. MVEST under the state constitution is dedicated to transportation, no more than 60% to highways and no less than 40% to transit. And within that, the legislature can reallocate as it sees fit. So this section would take 2% off the highway fund, lowering it from 60 to 58%. Increasing the transit from 40 to 42 and giving the 8% change instead of the current 4% would go into the Greater Minnesota Transit account by statute. Section 58 begins, section, page 58, section 38, is a city parking facility fee. This section authorizes the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul individually to impose a fee on each parking space located in certain defined territory, basically the central business district of each city. It's to be paid by the owner of the parking space, and it's to be used for various transit and transportation type improvements, pedestrian improvements, and so on within the central business districts that are imposing the fee.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to that, to this issue of the city park facility, is this unusual that the city of Minneapolis, St. Paul, or Alexandria, for that matter, come to the legislature and ask for this? Just a point of clarification. I don't know that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I don't think it's unusual. You know, municipalities are creatures of state government, and their powers are derived through the state law. It's a good question. I don't know under their charter authority as charter cities of the first class if they can just do this or not. I'm guessing the answer is no, because they're asking us permission to do this. It's a good question that they maybe should take back to their city. I'm guessing they already worked with their city attorney, though I didn't actually ask that question. I just assumed that they needed permission from the legislature through state law to do this because they approached us with this idea.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. One thing that we noticed in committee that the University of, if you read the description in the law that outlines north of certain roadways and east and west of certain roadways, there is this is carving out the University of Minnesota members, basically. So that's one thing you may or may not be concerned about. But in this provision, apparently the cities are interested in charging everybody else except the University of Minnesota. So, Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, a question I'd have is why you would want to charge other higher education institutions. I guess I think of St. Thomas right off the top of my head. Does that fall into the boundaries that are laid out in law here?
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, this is focused on the downtown area of Minneapolis. We're not specifically, or City of Minneapolis, I don't think, specifically sought to exclude the University of Minnesota. The University of Minnesota isn't a part of downtown. It's across the river from downtown. So St. Thomas happens to be in downtown Minneapolis. That's true. And this describes the downtown area. I don't think it had anything to do with the University of Minnesota vis-a-vis the University of St. Thomas.
So, Mr. Chair and members, the other thing I would point out is that you can see in starting on line 59.12, clearly the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul want this authority to add an additional fee per parking stall to pay for these projects. You'll see the Nicollet Mall, PV Plaza, Downtown East Commons, and then St. Paul mentions a number of parks as well. So, member, I think I agree with Senator Ingebrigtsen. It's a relatively uncommon practice, and members, you may be interested, you may not be interested. This was not giving a hearing at all, and did not have a positive vote on this particular item in the bill until it was presented for final passage on its way to finance here.
Well, Mr. Chair, it was introduced as a bill, but I concede it wasn't heard as a separate bill. It was incorporated into the larger engrossment, and was in front of the committee two times in that capacity.
And Senator Peterson, I can't speak for what took place within Senator Dibble's division. You're a member of the division. I know St. Paul folks have talked to me about this and why they're making this request. I can only assume that St. Paul, Minneapolis, all sorts of people hang out in this place, that there was appropriate conversation with the division about doing this. There's not been, I mean, since it affects my city and Sarah Pappas's city and who else around this table, Sarah Champion City, you know, we haven't heard opposition to this from within our cities. At least I haven't within St. Paul.
So, Mr. Chair, you know, based on that comment, would you support that being charged on residential facilities as well? Or?
Well, I support what's in the bill.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
Yeah, thank you. I just look at line 58.20, so it would be not only publicly they're asking to have authority, but also for the private parking lots. Maybe that's why they're coming to the state for the authority. Would that be a fair assessment? Public, I understand. But
Senator Engelbert, since you're directing the question toward myself, I'm honestly not sure. What I can tell you is that, and I'll speak only from a St. Paul perspective, you know, the downtown council, which would be involved with the entirety of downtown with the office buildings, downtown council of Minneapolis has a much larger jurisdiction, many more buildings, many more people. I don't think we've heard concerns about this, and I would expect that, you know, if somebody's opposed, they sure show up in our offices pretty quickly.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble, I mean, you're from Minneapolis. You can have a sense from your city's perspective.
Right. So, Mr. Chair, I understand, you know, there's, of course, support from the city leaders, and city leaders have been in conversation with the downtown business community who have not articulated objection to this idea. I'll point out that the residential parking spaces are excluded. There was some mention of residential earlier.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, so did this bill that you mentioned, did that meet committee deadlines?
Mr. Chair, in terms of policy committee deadline, did not, but this, you know, I think this was deemed to be a part of finance/tax, you know, a tax matter. So,
Mr. Chair, has St. Paul Downtown Council give you an indication of what they want to charge? Is it $3? Is it $10? Is it $15? Or
Senator Peterson, I don't know. I indicated that I had not heard. I'd heard support from the leadership in St. Paul. I have not heard opposition from, say, the downtown council, and what I suggested is that if there was an objection, I would have heard about it. Just on a private basis, I have, as a lawyer, I've had some involvement with some private parking concerns, and I haven't heard anything from them at a different kind of level.
Thank you.
Again, I can't speak for Minneapolis, but from my end of it. So, sir, you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a number of questions, and they were going to be my questions are going to be preceded by. So, what was the testimony in committee? And I'm hearing that there was no hearing in committee, and that's problematic to me because my questions were about things like how do we define residential parking? I think of the downtown areas where there are apartment buildings that have a parking lot attached for residents, but it's also open to the public, but there's not assigned parking. Right. So which, if any, of those are public spaces? Which, if any, of those are private spaces? Is there a definition? I don't see it here. And so how would that be defined?
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Nienau, this is a matter for the city council to grapple with, and if any of those parking spaces are attributable, you know, on a proportional basis to residential spaces, I'm guessing that's how they would handle that.
Well, Mr. Chair, now we're seeing the problem with not having a hearing because, quite frankly, Senator Dibble, this is not a matter for the city council to grapple with. We're passing law. We are creating legislation.
Chair.
We're putting it in statute. We are having an undefined item. That is not for the city council to determine. And to Senator Peterson's question, is it a $1 fee? Is it a $10,000 fee? Is it a $50 fee? Is it a $500 fee? These are significant questions, and these are the kinds of things I wanted to know. What did the committee talk about? And I'm hearing that the committee didn't even hear this.
Mr. Chair, it's not accurate to say the committee didn't hear this. I said already it was in the bill as presented in front of the committee two times. You know, we had a number of provisions, provisions from Senator Kiffmeyer, provisions from Senator Westrum and others that came into the bill as a function of markup as well. Those and that constitutes a hearing. We had it presented initially, and then we had a markup. Those are hearings.
So, Mr. Chair, so if the City Council says picking a facility in St. Paul where a lot of legislators maintain housing during the legislative session, the Kellogg Square Apartments, they have a facility that's open to the public, but also every resident there, I presume, every resident there gets a parking space. If the City of St. Paul were to say to the whoever manages Kellogg, all of these spaces are open to the public, so every single space is going to get a fee of X dollars. What's to prevent the management from Kellogg Square to take the corollary and say, no, we have, pick a number, I don't know, 1,500 residents in a 2,000 parking space ramp, and they can park in any space. We think all of those are residential, and everyone ends up in litigation because of the ambiguity in this language.
Mr. Chair. I think, you know, everything like this meets a kind of a common sense and reasonableness test. So so if that building you mentioned has spaces attributable to the residences, and some proportion, and some other proportion is operated in a kind of a classically commercial mode. You know, my familiarity with those circumstances is a resident pays a certain amount for their parking as a part of their rent. They have a little card, key card that gets them in, and then they just take the first available spot rather than an assigned spot. Although in most instances, I think they just take an assigned spot. Then, of course, those spaces would be excluded from this fee. You know, I don't think it's that hard to figure out.
And Mr. Chair, I'm making a point more than I'm making an argument. My point is I can hypothesize and you can hypothesize, but no one here is saying here's what the testimony was. And, Mr. Chair, that's my point, much more important than my argument.
Well, the testimony was, and there was testimony from a representative of the City of Minneapolis who had also been working with the City of St. Paul, that the intent was not to include residential parking, and then this language came in by amendment for that purpose, supporting my argument that we had a hearing.
All right.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Dibble, we have some time concerns. I'm waiting to hear what, because we still have a lot of language to go through, I'm waiting to hear from upstairs as to where we are with session, not session, whatever, relative to this committee and what our scheduling is going to be like. If we're going to get into a long discussion, however, about this, rather than get into all these rhetorical discussions, Senator Dibble, I don't know if there's anybody from the two cities who want to testify as to what the intent is, so we can just I don't want to spend an hour on something where we have procedural concerns as opposed to substantive concerns. So maybe we could, certainly, you know, would it be okay if we allow Ms. Brzozowski to continue past this section and come back to it and have a more useful discussion without a lot of back and forth and get folks here? Is that okay for a few minutes?
Mr. Chair, I do have one question about the section.
Pardon?
I have a question about this section, if we want. I mean, I'm wondering, I'm asking if I'm allowed to ask a question at this point or you want to?
Well, I was hoping we could, my response to Senator Nino was, if we're going to do a lengthy discussion about this section, could we get some of the folks who might have more direct answers, or might have some of the more detailed answers?
unless it's something that Senator Dibble can answer.
But I think
go ahead.
I think Mr. Senator Dibble can answer. Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, it says in the first portion that it's that whether it's publicly or privately owned. So, and then if the St. Paul City of St. Paul imposes this, will all of the state parking ramps here on by the Capitol, will all of those be have it imposed on them? Because it applies to public ramps.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fischbach, I think no, because none of the ramps on this, none of the parking spaces on this side of 94 would be included.
Okay. All right. Mr. Chair, I will read that again because I'm unless I have a map, it's very difficult for me to picture where we are. So I will look again at that portion, but I just wanted to confirm that it wouldn't affect all of the parking ramps up here.
Except we're going to we'll have a special carve out for all the senators' ramps. Senators'
ramps. And Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, that's not what I was asking for. I was just curious if all of our folks would, because I know that our people pay to be in the ramps and if there would be an additional cost to them.
It's all bounded by, Mr. Chair, 94 is one of the boundaries. So it's and just the downtown area.
Again, could we possibly go on with other sections and come back to this when we have some people who can answer the more detailed questions?
Mr. Chair, I think Senator Dibble answered my question. I think he was very able to. Other than the map issue, I'll look again, but he answered the question.
Okay.
It was legitimate.
Let's go on. Ms. Brzozowski.
Mr. Chair.
And we'll come back.
I've been asked to go quickly through these sections, so if you want me to pause on something, I'll be happy to do that. So starting again on page 59, section 39, and this is a mechanism. This is under the Senator Coonan provision that allows local governments to have a sales tax exemption for road maintenance vehicle purchases. And this, because of the retroactive effective date, this allows the local government units to apply for a refund of tax paid since middle 2014. Okay, then Article 7, beginning on page 60, has several sections that contain efficiency measures. The first one has to do with the proceeds of sale of software that MnDOT has developed. And if they use Trunk Highway Fund money to develop the software, then the proceeds of sale or license go back to the Trunk Highway Fund. Section 2 relates to eligibility for corridors of commerce, and this was an amendment proposed by Senator Kiffmeyer and Senator Jensen. Section 3 allows MnDOT to do some limited transferring of appropriations among funds subject to alerting the legislature and subject to a number of limitations as to which funds can and cannot be used, impacted by these transfers. Page 62, Section 4 creates a revolving loan account for purchase of state right-of-way for trunk highway funds. And this is effective on January 1, 2016. Section 5, which is on, this is after the
64.
Ralph Fund. Okay, that is on page 64, and that expands an existing statutory appropriation to MnDOT. So that MnDOT can pay its expenses related to acquisition and disposal of property. Current law allows them to do this with only leased property, but this section would expand it to any interest in property would be covered by this statutory appropriation. Section 6 removes the requirement that MnDOT pay for utility relocation for in highway right-of-way in trunk highway projects. Section 7 was mentioned before, Senator Torres Ray's initiative to allow owners of towed recreational vehicles to pay their registration fee at their option once every 3 years. And Section 9 was mentioned by Senator Dibble as that is.
Chairman.
Senator Thomasoni.
Real quickly, on the 65.1, if MnDOT doesn't pay, who pays?
Correct.
Yeah, but who pays if MnDOT doesn't pay?
utilities pay?
Oh, Mr. Chair, utilities would have to pay for a relocation of their facilities in the state right away when they have to be relocated.
Now, Mr. Chair, on page 66, section 9 provides, as Senator Dibble discussed, for replacement of license plates on passenger vehicles every 10 years instead of every 7 years. Section 10, sections 8 and 10 together are the penalty surcharge for late payment of vehicle registration taxes. Again, this was discussed, $25 a month up to $100. And this goes back, this goes into the Highway User Fund. Section 11 is a flexibility provision for MnDOT to move federal funds to projects where they would be the most useful. Sections 12 and several sections after that, beginning on page 68, allow for health insurance coverage for survivors of a volunteer firefighter who is killed in the line of duty. And there are various provisions that relate to that.
And, Mr. Chair, this is in my bill because this is a administrative dollars in the Department of Public Safety, which falls under my division. So it seems like an unusual piece in this bill, but it is in the jurisdiction of our committee.
And, Mr. Chair, this is a Senator Jensen provision, and it provides for termination of benefits, type of coverage, continuation of coverage where coverage previously existed or existed for other classes of municipal employees. Section 16, beginning at the very bottom of page 69, changes the fees that are allowed for State Patrol escort services, allows them to set the fee to recover their costs. Section 17 on page 70 requires deaths of active firefighters in the line of duty to be reported without delay to the state fire marshal, including the cause of the death. Section 18 removes aircraft acquisition costs from the charges for air transportation services that the commissioner can recoup from users of the services. Section 19, beginning on 70, adds transit purposes to the existing right-of-way acquisition loan fund that's administered by the Metropolitan Council. Section 20 requires the Commissioner of Transportation to identify in a report the status of various efficiency recommendations that have been made by a task force and to discuss future efficiencies planned in department operations. Article 8, the Section 1 is part of a Senator Westrum bill. Section 1 includes unconventional vehicles for purposes of vehicle registration. Section 2 is a Senator Peterson, and this has been discussed already, restricting eligibility for drive-away in-transit licenses to owners of operations in Minnesota, and they can be used outside of Minnesota as well. Section 3 is a Senator Peterson and I believe Senator Rosen provision that creates a special license plate for breast cancer awareness.
Mr. Chair, an item that wasn't even introduced as a bill and had no hearing by some definition of no hearing in this room.
And that is, begins on page 75. Section 4 on page 76, that subjects this is Senator Westrum's provision, along with sections 6 and 7, and this subjects unconventional vehicles to motor vehicle titling requirements if the vehicle has a VIN number or other identifying sequence letters or numbers assigned by the manufacturer. And these vehicles are defined in Section 6 by weight and ability to attain a 60-mile-an-hour speed. And Section 7 provides that these vehicles may be operated on public highways except for freeways unless they are prohibited by the road authorities. Then going back to Section 5 that was in the middle of these unconventional vehicle pieces, this imposes a $100 reinstatement fee for a revoked international fuel tax agreement license.
Mr. Chair.
Sarah Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, on these unconventional vehicles, does a person need a driver's license, or how does that work?
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, yeah, they would need a driver's license to drive these. These are small trucks, basically, is another way of saying small trucks. You know, the biggest debate around them is whether or not they're safe to drive on regular roads.
It says it's not limited to ATVs as well, so I was just...
Where, okay.
77.9. Okay. Oh, the exclusion.
All right, we'll get back to you on that. I don't understand that.
These little vehicles. Yes, Mr. Chair. Section 8, which is on page 77, is a Senator Kent initiative, and this is coming out of the Motor Vehicle Insurance Verification Task Force that requires a vehicle owner when applying for registration or ownership transfer to show their motor vehicle insurance information. Then Section 9 and several sections beyond, and it begins on 77, is the driver's license for all Senator Champion initiative that defines and establishes a driving privilege license. And this is available for people who are unable to demonstrate legal presence in the United States. There are provisions that limit its use for driving only and not for proof of identification, legal presence, citizenship, or voter registration. There are sections that just insert a reference to this new type of license. Section 13 on page 79 establishes a $17.25 fee for a driving privilege license. Section 14 requires, and this is actually already in rule, it requires a driver's license application to include a space where the applicant will attest to residence in Minnesota. And the section also deals with a government identification card, which is a passport or other type of primary document from outside of the United States as acceptable proof of identity to obtain a Minnesota driver's license. Section 15 provides that the driving privilege license must be plainly marked for driving only. And later in this article, there is a provision that requires the Secretary of State to notify the county auditors and election judges as to the appropriate use of this driving privilege license so that it cannot be accepted for voter registration. Section 16, beginning on page 83, is the Senator Peterson initiative on active transportation programs. And this creates various accounts for Greater Minnesota and the metropolitan area to be used to either create programs or to award grants to create programs for active transportation, non-motorized transportation, including bicycle, pedestrian activities. The whatever authority is administering these funds, and it could be CTIB, the Met Council, or MnDOT, will establish a project evaluation and selection process. And you'll see later on in the article that the non-motorized advisory committee will make recommendations as to how to set up this program. Section 17 deals with active transportation in Greater Minnesota, and it establishes a floor for use of federal funds for these purposes. Section 18 creates a major local bridges account in the Minnesota State Transportation Fund for major bridge projects on local road systems that carry a total cost in excess of $30 million. Section 19 on page 86 is the railroad assessment that was discussed previously. This is for Class 1 rail carriers. It's $32.5 million in total annually, and it's divided up among the Class 1 carriers based on their mileage in the state, route miles operated in Minnesota. And the proceeds of the assessment are deposited in the rail grade crossing safety improvement account. And there are several purposes stated, mostly the rail safety office that will newly be created by MnDOT. And that covers both rail safety issues and also freight issues in general. And it also will cover highway rail grade crossing improvements and construction. So there was the amendment that Ms. Boyd walked through earlier, limited the amount that can be spent on that out of this assessment proceeds on the rail safety office to, I think, $1.4 million annually. Section 20 expands the use for the rail service improvement account so that it can be used to improve capacity and safety at rail yards. Section 21, which begins on page 88, requires MnDOT to establish a local contribution rate for airport projects that have state and federal funding. The rates cannot be less than 5% for local contribution, except in situations where federal funding is paying for 90% of the project. Section 22 is a Senator Bonoff provision, and this requires the Metropolitan Council to study feasibility of commuter rail in the I-394 corridor. Section 23 is page 91 is a Senator Rest provision that requires preparation of an EIS for a described railroad connector project, which is describing a project in Crystal to connect two railroads. And the project is delayed until the Commissioner of Transportation has determined adequacy of the EIS. Section 24, I mentioned already about Senator Champion's initiative for driver's licenses for all, requiring training and information for election judges. Section 25 is a Senator Peterson initiative on public-private partnerships, and it sets up a pilot program that can be used by MnDOT and Met Council to fund up to three projects, and the language details restrictions on project selection. It provides for involvement of public employees, and there are various provisions concerning how to utilize federal funding and what has to be in the public-private agreement. There will be a report to the legislature on August 1, 2016. Section 26, beginning on page 96, requires MnDOT to use an evaluation process, an objective kind of a data-driven process to select which transportation projects are going to be funded. So the development of the plan for this evaluation must be ready for use by March 1, 2016. Section 27, which begins near the bottom of 97 and goes on for a couple of pages, creates a road user charge working group. This is a Senator Franzen provision. And the mission of this working group is to review policy and technical issues concerning what used to be called a mileage-based user fee, and that this fee would ultimately replace the gas tax. This group would have legislative members, executive members, and public members, and it would report to the legislature by January 15 of 2017. Section 28, beginning on page 99, is a Senator Kent provision requiring a review and assessment of MnDOT's organizational effectiveness. This review must be conducted by certain specified entities, including the Humphrey School, and reported to the legislature by mid-2016. Section 29, I mentioned, having to do with development of criteria for active transportation projects. Section 30 is a requirement that the Commissioner of Management and Budget report by January 15, 2016 to the legislature concerning expenditures and transfers of from the trunk highway and highway user funds from 2010 to 2015. Section 31 requires the MnDOT to adopt certain design standards and guidelines that would be applied consistently over the various road systems of state, county, and municipal that have similar characteristics. And this was a Senator Schmidt provision, and that concludes the policy articles.
Senator, thank you, Mr. Chair. And real quickly, Senator Dibble, on the bottom of page 99, included in the review assessment is the State Smart Transportation Initiative at the University of Wisconsin. Is that some specialized unit or?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, this is a Senator Kent initiative. We had some discussion about these three entities. I think they wanted to be sure that at least one of them that they were using was out of state, get a little bit of distance, and I'm given to understand that the folks over at our friends across the river at Wisconsin in this particular initiative do good work and, you know, can provide some of the. So you got the Humphrey School that has kind of public policy focus. You have the Carlson School that has kind of some public administration and management focus, and then these folks over in Wisconsin that have some transportation expertise. And I think that was why that mix was come up with.
Okay, Ms. Brzozowski.
We're done.
Was it good? Okay, so we've reached the end of going through the bill. What I'm going to suggest to committee members, it's a couple minutes after noon, so we need to go upstairs. I haven't heard any word as to how we're going to handle the committee for the rest of the day and evening. So I'm going to suggest we recess. We said we'd get back to the section on the Minneapolis-St. Paul parking. Let's try to find some people from those cities who can answer the questions presented that we don't have the answers for. We're going to be, whatever we do today, we'll be staying here so you can keep stuff at your place. And as soon as we know what's going on with the schedule, we'll reconvene here. Yeah. Senator Dibble, anything else you want to present?
Sounds like a good plan, Mr. Chair.
All right.
That's it, huh?
Yes, that's important.
Good work. Sure, an official motion type thing.
No. Okay.